Raptors are in Indianapolis tonight to play the Pacers. That game will be on Sportsnet 1, 7:30 p.m. pregame, 8 p.m. tip-off. Leo, Matt, Eric Smith, and Michael Grange. And that'll be followed on Sportsnet 1 by the Bulls and the Warriors at 10:30 p.m. The Bulls 3-13, the Warriors 13-5. That's got 160 to 42 written all over. Maybe not.
42.
Maybe not that. They're not that bad.
Not with Bobby Portis in the mix.
Bobby Portis. They're not that bad. Actually, they are.
They are that bad.
They are that bad.
Yeah.
They stink. Let's bring in Matt Devlin, our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. So, Matt, the Raptors in against the Pacers tonight. The first question I'll ask you is, how would you expect Dwayne Casey would use Norman Powell tonight and OG Anunoby? Are we going to see any change to the starting lineup, or do you think he'll stick with OG?
No, I think he'll stick with OG. CJ Miles may not be here, evening. He and his wife had a baby girl late last night back in Toronto, I believe. And so congratulations to them.
Absolutely.
So I know he had to leave, obviously, to go back there. I don't know if he'll be back in time, and understandably so. So I think with that, you may decide to bring Norman off of the bench just because he can provide, you know, a little bit of offensive pop and kind of, you know, play, I think, a little bit freer. But that's a... You know, I think that that's going to be kind of an open question, maybe for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see kind of how it ultimately all plays out with OG. I think OG is a starter based on his size. I understand he's not 100% yet. It's going to take a little bit of time. But I like him at that three position. That's his natural position in comparison to Norman.
The game against the Knicks that the Raptors are coming off of was obviously brutal. The third quarter, you know, just no one really wants to talk about it. And we had Grange on the show yesterday, and he was saying that games like that, quarters like that, sometimes it's best to just move on. But for me, what's interesting watching the NBA these days is that, and you guys say it on the broadcast a ton too, no matter the lead, it's like it's never safe anymore because the teams are just so good, scoring so out of control. There's so much offensive prowess just in the league in general. Do you remember a time that scoring was like this, that no lead was safe, and it seemed at any given time if you kind of just took that breath that you let the other team back in?
Well, first of all, that 28-0 run, I believe it was the longest run in the NBA since 2009.
Yeah.
The scoring margin of plus 31 was the largest scoring margin with a quarter in the shot clock era for the New York Knicks organization, mm-hmm. which takes you all the way back to 1954-55.
Mm-hmm.
I think we forget that when you go back in time, there was in the 80s, up until Detroit and Chuck Daly and, you know, really the Bad Boys, when they slowed things down, that, you know, it was a league that got up and down in a hurry. I mean, there were final games that were 116 to 113 between mm-hmm. the Lakers and the Celtics in the Showtime era. So, you know, the rate at which they scored, I think, you know, was up there as well, clearly with the rule changes, clearly with the way that teams are playing, you know, with quicker pace, and also with the addition of the knowledge of, you know, the three. Yes, I do think that, you know, you can shoot yourself in and shoot yourself out probably like no other time in the league. But there was a time and certainly where you look at the Showtime Lakers where, you know, they were able to down, you know, they could be down big and come back in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I was also thinking in addition to the, you know, the Showtime Lakers, I mean, you think of some of those Philadelphia 76ers teams as well. And they would basically, they could press the pace as well as anybody.
Absolutely.
It's interesting because,
you know, as fast as, you know, there was a stat that, you know, the Phoenix Suns under Mike D'Antoni would have ranked in pace, and this was a, you know, 7 seconds or less, 8 seconds or less offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the pace would have been ranked 24th in today's NBA.
Wow.
But you have to remember, though, too, that part of why the pace is up throughout the league is that you have both teams that are playing really fast,
right?
To your point, Ashley, where, you know, Phoenix, they were pushing the pace and you had everybody else trying to slow it down. So that ultimately would slow, you know, Phoenix's pace down at times.
You know, it's funny, and Matt, anytime, and I guess we can blame Masai Ujiri for this and culture change, because anytime we have you on, or Leo, or whoever, we talk about three-pointers. Since making a season-low three-pointers, I think it was November 5th, November 6th against Washington, November 5th, the Raps are fourth in the NBA in made threes behind Houston, Utah, and Cleveland. They're sixth in the NBA in shooting threes. They've made at least 10 three-pointers in their last eight games, or seven of their last eight games. I guess we can stop talking about this, can't we?
Well, it's a good point, because it is what it is.
Yeah, but it's the numbers are quite shocking, Matt, I think, for people who watch.
Well, you're right. I mean, it's you're reinventing yourself,
yes,
with essentially the addition of CJ Miles and OG Anunoby. I mean, those are, and then you're bringing in a Fred VanVleet, DeLon Wright. Unfortunately, DeLon's injured, and they're getting more minutes as you trade, you know, Corey to the Indiana Pacers. You're right. I mean, there's that sense of you reinvented yourself with the same roster, essentially, understanding that they could make some adjustments within their own game in order to play the way that, you know, they felt that they needed to play. And, you know, it's certainly key. You're going to take those shots. You have to make them at times. I mean, it's unfortunate. You know, it goes back to, you know, Wednesday night in New York in that third quarter where you couldn't literally buy a bucket, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks were playing really hard. You had played really well in the first half. It didn't translate to the third quarter. And unfortunately, everything that Hardaway and Porzingis were doing was just setting, you know, that arena on fire. And you couldn't respond at all from an offensive standpoint. And ultimately, you cut the game to six. And that's what was crazy, you know, that you get right back into it. And how do you get back into it? You know, you turn over, get out, go, pull up threes. I think they're feeling, I do think that they are feeling, despite the loss, they're feeling more comfortable, Jeff, within this offense.
Matt, I saw this stat today that kind of just had me like sit up a little straighter. I was like, huh, that's really interesting. Kyle Lowry, one of only four players to be averaging more than seven assists and five rebounds. Keeping company with him, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, Ben Simmons. I think it's easy to look past Kyle and the season that he's had so far to be able to adapt to a new style of offense, to be able to kind of change his mentality on the court, him and DeMar both trusting their teammates a ton more. Do you think he has the ability this year to just put together a really nice season, but that might go unnoticed by some who aren't paying attention just because of the way the Raptors have decided to reinvent their offense?
Well, it's interesting because you could tell early in the season he wasn't all that comfortable, and he admitted that he wasn't all that comfortable with him. You know, the context of the new offense, and that's understandable. You're 31 years of age, and now you're adapting. That's a good question. I think he's at the stage of his career where it ultimately depends upon what they do in the playoffs. But within that, you look at the double-doubles that he's put together. I mean, had a double-double on, you know, Wednesday night. This is a team that, you know, on the road, when he plays big, they win. He's had, what, four double-doubles and a triple-double. They've all come out on the road. There might be a sense of that. I don't know. You look around the East and you think about The point guards that are in the East, the high level of point guards that are in the East, it's impressive. From Kyrie to John Wall to, you know, Kyle Lowry. And, you know, that doesn't even get into, you know, some of the younger players that play that position. That might be the case, Ashley, but I think at the end of the day, I think it's going to be valued. This season is going to be valued on what they do in the playoffs.
I wanted to ask you quickly, the podcast that you guys do, it must have been really tough for you when Patrick Patterson left because, you know, two Matts, one Pat. Have you guys decided what you're going to do with that?
Two Matts, two Pats. Yeah, well, you know what? We're having some fun just, you know, changing it up now. So it's kind of like two Matts and Matt Tierney and myself and, you know, a big question mark. But yesterday we actually had Fred VanVleet join us. So that was a lot of fun. And we talked a lot about, you know, him growing up in Rockford, Illinois and playing at Wichita State and obviously his role on the team and the growth of, you know, his game. So we just, you know, switch it up, I think, now, Ashley.
Hey, speaking of Fred VanVleet, the Raptors will run into their old friend Corey Joseph tonight. How is he fitting in Indiana? And is that a good fit for him?
I think it is a good fit for him. You know, Michael Grange had a nice piece on him, as you both know. And, you know, I think that, you know, for Corey and for the Raptors, I think it ultimately for both it was a good move. He was an integral part of the Raptors. You think about last season, you know, they were 15-7 with him as a starter. But they understood that they had DeJuan and Fred, you know, and the growth within their game there and with how the construction of the roster was that they needed to move on from Corey. And Corey, you know, for him, you know, to, you know, come to Indiana, they're playing better basketball. At his stage of his career, I think it's actually been a great move for him.
He's shooting just under 47% from three-point range, by the way, speaking about it.
And his career marks 32.
But this is the way the league is going, right? And this is the way that, you know, so players are putting more time into it than they have in the past. And so look at DeRozan. You know, I know his number is not a huge number from the three-point line, but yet, you know, he's stretching out, making teams, you know, quote-unquote honest now that they have to guard him when he's out there a little bit. And so, you know, it's something that you're going to continue to see.
Matt, I just want to shift focus a little bit. You know, this look, I love Kevin Durant's game, and I love watching Russell Westbrook play. When do they stop it? When do they stop this whole, you know, calling each other out during games, calling each other out in the press and social media? I mean, enough's enough. It's really, at this point, I'd almost like Adam Silver to call them in somehow and say, shut up. I mean, seriously.
I don't know if it's ever going to be over. Mm-hmm. Because I think that Oklahoma City was hurt by it. And maybe in time. But then also, as Russell said the other night, you know, I'm a competitor. I don't like anybody when I'm, you know, I'm going up against when they're on the floor.
Right.
The only people I like are my teammates, you know. And, you know, so he's a competitor. He wants to win. And think about what they did that night against Golden State. So I think that, you know, maybe internally the next game they just say, you know what, we're not going to, you know, maybe Durant says, you know what, I'm not going to engage myself in that. But I think Russell enjoys that aspect of it because it helps fuel him, right, in this, you know, it's us against everybody kind of mentality. But so I don't know. Maybe time, you know, they say time heals, right, all this. But they were hurt. They, you know, Oklahoma City was hurt when Durant decided to leave. So I think Jeff, you may see a couple more of those.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I have no problem with, obviously, you know, with personal, you know, personal grudges or anything like that when it comes to athletes. I mean, in some ways it adds texture to the game. But, man, I just, you know, it's not as if he's the first athlete to leave a team. And he won't be the last athlete to leave a team. And I don't know. I tend to kind of side with Kevin Durant in this, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I think he's the first to have left Oklahoma City. That was a
fair point.
Like a star, right?
Fair point.
And so, in a small market, right? I mean, if you put this in the context of, you know, Winnipeg Jets, right? Or, you know, where this team, the identity of the team and the city, you know, it's all wrapped into one. It's what they talk about, think about, you know, all day long. And they were hurt. You know, the town was hurt that, you know, a mega star, one of the top five players in the game said, you know what, I'd like to go another place. And, you know, I want to go another place because I think I can win going to another place. And so I think that's, you know, maybe why it's a wound that's still exposed.
Mm. Matt, good stuff as always. Look forward to your work tonight. Travel safely, my friend. We'll see you back here.
All right. Look forward to it. Thanks so much.